My friends at MyPillow, my buddy Mike Lindell, told me he was coming out with a brand new product. It's called the new mattress topper. So I got the new mattress topper immediately, and I've been sleeping on it now for a couple of months. It's the best thing you've ever felt in your life. Now, you literally have MyPillow foam for support. It's a transitional foam that helps relieve pressure points, and it's ultra-soft, patented temperature-regulating cover. And I got to tell you, it has a 10-year warranty, a cover that's washable and dryable. It's made in the USA, backed by their 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee. Once you try this new mattress topper, you put it right over your mattress, you will never sleep better. And right now, you, my radio listeners, you're going to save 30% off when you go to MyPillow.com and use the promo code TOPPER. And by the way, Mike will also give you two standard MyPillows absolutely free. All right, so try MyPillow.com, promo code TOPPER. Promo code TOPPER for this great deal and the best night's sleep you ever had. Want to remind you, too, if you're an unhappy timeshare owner, you went on a vacation, you're having the time of your life, somebody says you can duplicate this every year for the rest of your life, and then you never end up going back. And then you realize, there are other nice places I could go, too, and I could better use that money. But every year you got to pay the maintenance fees and whatever other fees associated with it. You wish you never did it. Well, there's a way out, thanks to my friends at Lone Star Transfer, Brian and Karen. They run a family-owned business. They will make sure that your experience is a pleasant one. They will get you out of your timeshare legally, ethically, and quickly. I have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, and this is what they do. Don't let another year go by and you're paying all this money for a timeshare you're never going to use. Now, two ways to get them. Online at LoneStarTransfer.com, all right? Or give my friends a call, no obligation. Call #250 on your mobile, keyword timeshare. Just hit #250 on your mobile phone, say the keyword timeshare, or just go to LoneStarTransfer.com. All right, happy Friday. Glad you're with us. And write down our toll-free telephone number. It's 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. A lot coming up on the program today, including, yes, another. Yes, another. You can't even believe it. This is now the fourth drop as it relates to the deep state and all of these depositions and all the questioning went on but behind closed doors and the information that we have about it. We'll get to that in the course of the program today. I do have a lot to say about Republicans and, of course, in the Senate. I don't know what to say when people can't see that this is a real crisis. How many people have to die, seriously, before we say this is a national emergency? You know, 90% of our heroin. We're losing, what, about 300 kids a week? Is that the number? 300 people a week. Now, just imagine, maybe it's not impacting your life. Maybe it's not I don't think there's anybody listening to this program right now that doesn't know somebody, some family, some friend, some relative, some friend of a friend, somebody in the neighborhood whose kid is struggling with addiction, opioid addiction. You know, it may start out with the pills, the Vicodin, the Percocet, the OxyContin, and then, of course, then grandma's prescription runs out or they're taking it too fast, and then the next thing you know, they're buying the pills on the street. They don't know what they're buying. We've learned a lot. Look at my friend Eric Bowling. Look at what he went through. You know, his son bought a Xanax, an anti-anxiety medication, and, you know, you could say, well, why didn't he get a prescription? Probably should have. Maybe he didn't want to ask for it. Maybe it was embarrassing. Maybe he was having anxiety. I don't know. But in that Xanax, you know, the kid's name is Chase. He's 19 years old. He died. But in that Xanax, it was laced with fentanyl. He lost his son, his only son. You know, think of that now, 300 times a week, tens of thousands of times a year. And you think that 90% of heroin and a lot of the fentanyl that we have in this country is coming across that southern border. Now, just imagine for a second, the police come to your door and they're the ones that tell you. How are you going to feel? It's over. You'll light, you know, right then and there. Now, to Eric's credit, I mean, him and his wife have done an amazing job of taking the worst thing that I can imagine. Kids are not supposed to die before their parents. Just not supposed to happen. You know, 19, nothing but and he was a great kid. I'm telling you, I knew this kid. That's why when Eric is on the show and he says, you can't say, well, that, you know, not about me. It's not going to happen to me. You have to think it can happen to you. Remember, you know, young men, their brains are half formed at 17, 18, 19. Linda's laughing, but it's true. Their decision making, their brains don't form fully, ask any doctor, till like 24, 25. And they make, and I know at that age, I made bad decisions. Yeah, I know you all want to know what they are, don't you? You'd love to, but you make one bad decision. It's not like, you know, well, you drank too much and you threw up. Some people make the decision, they drink too much and then they get in a car, or their buddy's driving a car and he's had too much to drink. Or even, you know, on another side of it, you know, somebody else had too much to drink, and they, you know, I know people that were killed by drunk drivers, so many of them. Where do you think the group MAD came from? You know, where do you think the term angel moms and dads came from? People killed by illegal immigrants. I know, too busy, Nancy Pelosi didn't want to meet with them. So when do you say this is a national emergency? When do you say all hands on deck? When do you say we're going to cut off the avenue through which these drugs are coming into the country? The only means to do that is to build the wall and to add other security measures. And they'll say, well, a lot of it's coming through the ports of entry. Good. Let's figure out better ways to fix that too, which we are doing. And get the wall built. You know, you have the two-year period. We keep citing 4,000 homicides, 30,000 sexual assaults, illegal immigrants against Americans, 100,000 violent assaults. We've had angel moms and dads on this program. We know about the cartels. Cartels have gotten so smart in an evil way that they take drones now and fly them into our country. Literally fly them over American soil so they can literally map out the best path for the, quote, coyotes or the drug smugglers to cross, so they'll have the maximum chance of success that the drugs get across the border. And the exact path where there's no police, where there's no border patrol, no ICE agents. And by the way, do you know to actually get that, to take that drone out of the air that we know is coming from, we actually have to, hold on, keep it up there for a while, because now we have to go to court and you have to get it authorized by a judge to take it out of the air. Think about that. How stupid is that? And then you have 12 Republicans. And look, I understand they're constitutionally wrong. Legally, the law says, and I've quoted it so many times on this program, that the president, especially as it relates to drugs, has the right to build barriers. That's the current law. It's not a constitutional crisis. It doesn't mean Nancy Pelosi is going to come in and say, great, we're abolishing the Second Amendment, national emergency, guns. That's not constitutional. In this case, Congress legislated the right of the president to build the barriers to stop the international drug corridors, period. And that's within his domain. He's also the commander in chief. And if saving 300 lives a week and tens of thousands of lives a year isn't that important to people, I'm like, where have our hearts gone? Just imagine. Yes, officer. I'm sorry to inform you, to have to inform you, that your son or daughter died earlier today of a drug overdose. What happens to your life that moment? Not really promising. Well, the good news is this. The good news is the president is going to veto this. They don't have the votes to override the veto. The president gets his money, and he's even looking for an additional $8.6 billion in monies for the wall. And it's just sad that that happens. You know, I really can't believe I have to say this here. Ocasio-Cortez, you know, compassionate liberal that she is, you know, we had this terrible shooting in New Zealand. What's the number now? 49 people. I lost 49 in a mosque in New Zealand. 49 people killed. And the unbelievable thing is this guy's live streaming it the whole time. Got to be a really ugly, dark, sick, twisted, evil, miserable SOB that is devoid of any human conscience whatsoever. You really do. Anyway, she said, well, at first thought, I thought of saying, Imagine being told your house of faith isn't safe anymore, but I couldn't say imagine. The lawmaker wrote, citing the deadly shootings in Charleston, South Carolina, the church of Pittsburgh, Penn, a synagogue, et cetera, et cetera. What good are your thoughts and prayers when they don't even keep the pews safe, she added. Ocasio-Cortez noted that thoughts and prayers is a reference to the NRA phrase she says is used to deflect conversation away from policies that change during tragedies. Congresswoman called on communities to come together to fight for each other and stand up for their neighbors. You know, it's so interesting. I watch this all the time. You know the people that are protected the most by guns, by armed guards, by walls? Oh, Hollywood stars. They don't want you to have, we can't have guns to protect ourselves. We can't, you know, they have armed guards to protect them. By the way, it, rightly so. Thank God the day that Steve Scalise was shot by the Bernie Sanders supporter, thank God those two brave Metro police, literally with a 1% chance on paper of surviving by walking out in an open field with a guy that's a barrier away behind a fence and bushes, you know, picking people off with a rifle. And all they've got is a pistol. At that distance, a rifle versus a pistol in an open field, you're done. You're a sitting duck. And they did it anyway. They were both injured, shot. They said, thank God. Amazing people do that. Because the odds really weren't good for them. But they did it anyway. They were armed. You know, you think of the many instances we brought John Lott on this program when we talk about, you know, more guns, less crime. You know, every time I'm offering a solution, I want a solution. I want every house of worship. I don't care what your religion is. I want every house of worship. I want every school. I want every municipality, municipal building, safe, secure. You know, you can't bring guns into like football games and the likes of that. And the thing is this, but there are armed guards and police at all of those events. You know, the thing is this. What do you do if an armed intruder comes into your house? I ask liberals this all of the time. What do you do? How are you going to defend yourself and your family? You can't. I'm going to call the police. You're dead. If he wants to kill you, she wants to kill you, you are dead. Now, I have said after all these school shootings what I think would be a solution to a really serious problem. And you know what? Our hearts and thoughts and prayers and love, of course it goes out to the victims in New Zealand. It's horrible. And all the people trying to say that this mad mosque gunman and his racist manifesto, you know, Donald Trump. Oh, I mean, it's just insanity. You know what? I didn't hear one liberal say that the guy that shot up the baseball field, the Republicans, that Bernie Sanders, you know, inspired him to do that. You got to blame the people that are crazy. Donald Trump has never said, go out and kill people in a mosque. Ever. Never would. That's not stopping those that use every tragedy. You know, why let a good tragedy go to waste, as they say? So anyway, but if we would take former, well-trained, retired military, well-trained, armed, retired military, well-trained, armed law enforcement, and we're going to say to them in every community all across America, if you donate 15 hours a week to a local school, 15, that'd be 2 days work, basically, 16 hours, maybe 16 hours a day. If you do an 8-hour day. And then we're going to have armed officers, maybe undercover. They can be in suits. They don't have to be in a police, in some type of police uniform. But one on every floor. Surround the perimeter. Make sure people can't get into the school during the day that shouldn't be in the school. Maybe put in the metal detectors. Guess what's going to stop happening? School shootings. That's a surefire way that you can do it. You can do the same thing. I know churches right now that have armed guards at every single solitary service. You may not know they're armed, but they're armed. Just like we have air marshals. You don't know who it is, but they're there to prevent tragedy. That's an answer. But I know it's a simple thing to do is just run to take away all guns, except for celebrities, except for politicians, except for their guards, except for, you know, then you're a sitting duck in your own home. Wow, you can't give me a good answer if somebody breaks into your home and it's a home invasion. They have a gun. How are you going to deal with it if you don't have a gun yourself? There is no good. But I'm going to run down to the kitchen and grab a knife. Knife against the gun's not going to work. You know, just so you know. Hey, if you're one of 34 million Americans that smokes, you know what a hassle it can be. For me, I'm out playing golf and I come back smelling like cigars. It's the smell on your hands and your breath, your clothes. But now, thanks to Juul, you don't have to worry about it anymore. Juul is a vaporizer. It does contain nicotine for a satisfying transition. Now, when I found Juul, it was a complete game changer in my life. I don't smoke any cigars any longer, and Juul was designed by smokers for smokers to be an alternative to whatever it is you're smoking. So if you're one of 34 million adults who do smoke cigars, cigarettes, pipe, whatever, well, there is an alternative to all of them. Now, to discover the smoking alternative that's like nothing you've ever tried, just visit juul.com/switchamerica. That's juul.com/switchamerica. Now, warning, this product does contain nicotine, and nicotine is addictive. All right, as we continue this Friday, 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. So in a document posted online before this horrible massacre, 49 innocent people in New Zealand mosques, the author, quote, is justifying the killings, the murder, the slaughter to create an atmosphere of fear. And, you know, further going on with this, you know, you got to understand, you're not sane if you can do something like this to a fellow human being. And there's something very, very detached and dark if you can do something like this to a fellow human being. But it doesn't matter whether you like people or not or agree with people or not. You know, just that, just like I don't understand the heartlessness of, well, we're going to deliver the baby. I can tell you exactly what that will happen in that situation. We're going to deliver the baby, make sure the baby's comfortable, and then the mother will decide whether to resuscitate the baby if it needs help or, you know, or medical attention or not. And we'll have a discussion. I'm like, okay, where's your disconnect? How do you not see? It's like everyone, if you're normal, you have any conscience, any soul, I know we're not perfect people, you're going to look and say, oh my gosh, we got to help, 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 help. That's what you're going to do. You can go in and you see people. You're not seeing people. You're just killing fellow human beings like this and justifying it. And, you know, it's just, and then the author describing, you know, as a racist, as a fascist, and obviously charged with murder in connection with the killings, you know, and being described as extreme right wing by the Australian Prime Minister, racist manifesto posted online, and then so many people rush to judgment. I said during the, you know, after the Bernie supporter in the baseball field, and so I said, you can't blame Bernie supporters or Bernie Sanders for this. It's the same thing here. And I even said, but I promise you, if it was a conservative, if there was the Democratic Party and a Trump supporter out there, like talk radio, that the blame would happen in 10 seconds. And yeah, here, I'm right again. All right, we'll continue. All right, glad you're with us. 25 now till the top of the hour here on this Friday. 800-941-SHAWN is our number. You want to be a part of this extravaganza. But to me, you know, do you really want an answer? You know, do you really want solutions? Or do we just want to keep playing the same game that is played after every incident happens? And that is, okay, you're going to say it's the gun. We're not going to take any added additional safety measures. And we're going to wait for the next time. And then everyone's going to say the same thing after that. Now, they always say, well, you won't agree to get rid of guns. No, I don't think that's the answer. But I'll tell you right now, if you want to stop church school shootings, let's talk about America for a minute. Because I hate to tell you, there are sick, insane, crazy, dark people. Let's just say for a minute that every school, every church, every municipal building that we really wanted to secure, We wanted to keep these places safe and secure to prevent incidents like this from happening. And if they do happen, to end them expeditiously before so many people get killed. I mean, you know, you think of this guy and, you know, it's just the amount of detail that went into this, how premeditated it is. And, you know, he, by the way, the New Zealand government said it would be illegal to share the video, which shows the gunman repeatedly shooting the worshippers at close range. To be very honest, I actually agree with that in a sense. You know, I how many times, Linda, have I said, watch this beheading? I've made you watch it. Because unless you watch it, you don't know. And I've watched these videos of some of these beheadings that took place. ISIS behead. Remember the one on the beach? Remember the one I really showed you? That, yeah, you know, the one who we thought it was somebody? We watched this. You have to see it. Because then you really can't absorb how horrible it is. Now, I understand some people are just not made to watch that. I get it. And you don't really want to because it sticks with you. Sort of like I hate, you know, being raised Catholic, I hate the idea that they have a wake and they lay a body out in a coffin and you're looking at a loved one. I'm like, oh my gosh, that image ends up being etched into your head and you can't get rid of it. You know, I've actually said to everybody I know, don't open a casket. I want people to remember me as I was, not what I'm looked like when I'm dead. Although it probably looks a lot like when I'm on TV because they pound so much makeup on me before I go on TV every night, you know. And, you know, it's just scary. These people should scare the living daylights. Now, imagine every church, every school, every municipal building. Now, we say to retired policemen, retired law enforcement, retired corrections officers, retired military people, all those people that have spent their life and devoted their life to the security and safety of others. Now they're retired, they're on a pension. What if we said to all of them, because a lot, you know, everybody I know that says they retire, almost so many of them, the only one that loves retirement the most is Neil Bortz. Guy travels around in the Bortz bus every single, you know, he's all over the place. And I'm like, do you ever get bored? Nope. Now, come on. You get bored? Nope. You don't miss it? Nope. That's what he says to me every time. I'm like, everybody around me says that God help them if I retire because they're going to go nuts. Because they're going to have to deal with me all day. Which is probably, you know, I don't know many talk show hosts that are fun to be around for a long time period of time. Let's be honest. They're all nuts. So are producers. So you cut it out. So are engineers, by the way. Mr. Blair is there in the background. By the way, I just want you to know, you so blew it. You know that.
Oh, God.
And just for the record. And well, let's put an armed guard in every church. Oh, just look at the school situation. You set around the perimeter. You put in the metal detectors. Now, imagine if we didn't put metal detectors in after 9/11. How stupid would that have been? 9/11 is a case where we did learn from the past. Now, yeah, is it a pain in the ass to go through when we were going to Vietnam, in and out of, you know, how many metal detectors and how many checkpoints? And oh, my, it was nuts. But you know what? I'm on the plane. The plane's safe. The plane got me all the way to Vietnam in 26 hours and got me home in 26 hours. Total with a it took Blair and Linda 64 each way, but that's their problem because Linda is stubborn and Linda refused to take the flight that was the more efficient one and decided to make two stopovers, which means that two planes broke, one plane was late, and so she leaves Thursday at 8 p.m. New York time with Blair. I leave 11 p.m. Friday night after TV, New York time. I get there in 25 hours. So I arrive, and I thought I got there before you, but you got there 1 hour ahead of me. You lost 24 hours in your day. And then I said, fix it. I'll put you on the flight. Now, just so you know, I try to be a good boss, and you know, I upgrade everybody on my team. I don't want them to be exhausted after a 24 hour flight like that. And, you know, and I you know, to be very honest, I'm embarrassed. If I'm sitting up there in first class and everyone else is in steerage, you know, remember from the Titanic? I don't feel right about it. So I make sure everyone, wherever I am, I'm putting them. And so, and it costs a little bit of money in that particular case. More than a little bit of money, right? What was the upgrade cost on each ticket? It was crazy. But don't you think if that's the right thing to do? I think it's the right thing to do. And I didn't mind. And we do that all the time. Anyway, but if you put the perimeter, you put the metal detectors in, you put in everything you need, and guess what's going to happen? You're going to protect those kids. Let's say a guy, if you have the perimeter covered, let's say you have every floor covered with an armed, retired police, military, and you have the metal detectors, what are the odds somebody's going to get that gun in that school? What are the odds that you're going to save lives? It's that simple. It's a solution, and it would work. Somebody breaks into your house, the same thing. If you have a shotgun, odds are you got a shot. A couple of them. And, you know, depending, you don't even have to be a good shot with a shotgun. You know, you can put, just have some means of fighting back. We want to really see these racist idiots walking into a mosque killing innocent people? I don't. It's horrible. But that's the answer. There's a reason why Hollywood stars that are being stalked by the paparazzi and, you know, all these different news shows, they have walls around their house. Oh, why don't they want a wall at the border to prevent the drugs from coming in? Why do politicians have armed bodyguards? We need to protect our politicians. Why do we have a Secret Service to protect the president of the United States? And how many times did I go out of my way to say, protect Obama? He is the highest elected official in the country. You got to. It's not politics. It's just we've got to protect our presidents. We got to protect people that want to. People shouldn't have to worry about going into a church, a synagogue, or a mosque and worry that they're going to get shot up. And I know church pastors that they've taken it into their own hands. Those places are secure. All right, on to other news. We'll get back to this later in the program. Apparently Bernie Sanders got injured. The oldest man ever to seek the White House is now apparently showed up in the campaign trail today with a huge head bandage. Apparently cut his head on a glass shower door this morning and received 7 stitches. All right, we hope he's better. It's amazing how Bernie has now become mainstream in the Democratic Party, isn't it? So Lindsey Graham, God bless, Lindsey's on fire. Lindsey Graham yesterday is all over the place. You know what he said? He said, no, we need a special counsel into Hillary Clinton because now we know things that we didn't know before. We learned, and we're going to get to this with Congressman Collins, the guy that's been releasing. We now have another, remember, John McCain went to the FBI with the dossier. Remember, it was his assistant that went to BuzzFeed and leaked the dossier. John McCain was up to his eyeballs in all this, and none of this was verified. And I do think that John McCain definitely, you know, oh, we got Donald Trump now. I think that's what he was thinking. I mean, they hated each other. Okay, fine, they hate each other. Can you give this to James right there? And so now we learned, first Bruce Orr, we learned everybody knew that the dossier was paid for by Hillary. We know that the dossier was never verified. We know that Steele hated Trump and was invested in him losing. Then we learned from Lisa Page that the Department of Justice under Loretta Lynch was making all of the decisions. And they were withholding important information. Like, for example, Lisa Page had said the DOJ overruled the FBI allowing Hillary's witnesses to sit in on the interrogation. That I didn't even pick this up the first time I read it. In other words, we're now beginning to see that absolutely the Department of Justice of Barack Obama, led by Loretta Lynch, let Hillary Clinton escape guaranteed criminal charges that any other American would have had in this email server scandal, despite overwhelming evidence that she was guilty of serious and multiple felonies. It was all orchestrated by the Justice Department under Loretta Lynch. Even Comey's top lawyer in the FBI, the general counsel, James Baker, wanted to indict her over violating the felony of the Espionage Act. It's a slam dunk as it relates to obstruction of justice, what she did by deletions and everything else. But now we know we have additional testimony from Page. First it was Bruce Orr, then Lisa Page, Peter Strzok, and now this aide to John McCain, who told House investigators the FBI objected to letting Hillary have other key witnesses in the email scandal sit in on the FBI interview. They were overruled. I never caught this. Lisa Page told Trey Gowdy, "We all at the FBI disagreed with the unusual decision to let Hillary Clinton have Cheryl Mills and Heather Samuelson present during her questioning." That was July 2nd. Oh, by the way, her boyfriend Peter Strzok did the questioning, given that they were potential fact witnesses. "We all at the FBI disagreed with it." As I recall, both lawyers for the FBI calling over to the DOJ prosecutors. Pretty certain Peter Strzok called over to prosecutors to say this is BS. I'm sure that is probably how he would have phrased it. Maybe something like, "Why are they attending?" And the answer we received back was they did not have a legal basis to exclude them from the interview because Clinton was representing them as her lawyers. That's just such a phony, fraudulent thing. Now we've got to get Loretta Lynch's text messages. Now, we know Page and Strzok hated Trump and Hillary should win $100 million to zero. You know, when are we going to get, what did, you know, Loretta Lynch, who met Bill Clinton just days prior on a tarmac at an FBO in Phoenix, Arizona? You know, maybe we need to ask Loretta Lynch, as Red State suggests today, why didn't the DOJ, FBI give Trump a defensive briefing if they suspected members of his cabinet had ties to Russia? I've asked that question many times. Really? Why didn't you say, listen, there might be somebody on your campaign. We're not sure. We're suspecting, because they wanted him to be involved. Just like when McCabe didn't told General Flynn, "Oh, you don't need a lawyer." And Comey bragged, "I was taking advantage of the chaos on day four of the Trump administration. I never would have done this to Bush or Obama." You know, Bruce Orr reveals the political operatives got the FBI to investigate the NRA. And Graham is saying he's blocking a resolution calling for the Mueller report to be made. And they offered a deal to Chuck Schumer. "Hey, Chuck, hey, well, how about you give us a special counsel as it relates to Hillary, and maybe we'll release the Mueller report." It's a two-tiered justice system. The whole thing is rigged. And now we know that Loretta Lynch needs to ask why. Why? Even Lisa Page and Strzok admit that they ran it. It was run by Democrats in the Obama DOJ, and they were never going to indict Hillary. That the fix was in, that our legal system was rigged, that it's a two-tiered justice system. It's one for the Clintons and one for the rest of us. We don't have equal justice under the law, and we don't have equal applications of our laws. That's what it all comes down to. But now we know, so now we need to do the right thing, and that's pursue the truth. If we do, Hillary will be indicted. The only thing I'll tell you is this. I know you're impatient. So am I. But it's happening. Stay tuned. It's all going to happen. Stay tuned. All right, we continue. 800-941-SHAWN is our number. Listen.
Presently, the police do have one suspect in custody. However, there could be others involved. Also, there are multiple scenes involved in this incident as well. And police will be giving more details as they can as the situation unfolds. Whilst I cannot give any confirmation at this stage around fatalities and casualties, what I can say is that it is clear that this is one of New Zealand's darkest days. clearly what has happened here is an extraordinary and unprecedented act of violence. Many of those who will have been directly affected by this shooting may be migrants to New Zealand. They may even be refugees here. They have chosen to make New Zealand their home, and it is their home. They are us. The person who has perpetuated this violence against us is not. They have no place in New Zealand. There is no place in New Zealand for such acts of extreme and unprecedented violence, which is, it is clear this act was.
What happened, you know, when at some stage, you know, after about 10 minutes, I was still at the back, and when I thought that probably the shooter has left, then I pushed myself to get inside the mosque, and it was unbelievable. I saw in the main room on the right-hand side about 20-plus people. Some of them were dead. Some of them were screaming. On the left-hand side, I saw about 10-plus people. Some of them were dead, and some of them were screaming, and they were asking me, is there any ambulance on the way? I said, you know, be patient.
The manifesto makes several references to the United States. In one portion, the author responds to a self-directed question about whether he supports President Trump. He writes, as a symbol of renewed white identity and common purpose, sure. As a policymaker and leader, dear God, no.
Is there someone out there tonight who's going to hear Trump's rhetoric and act on it? I mean, less than 6 months ago, we know one of his big supporters sent pipe bombs in the mail to dozens of people who Trump had personally attacked and demonized, who was driving around in a van with pro-Trump imagery and anti-CNN imagery. We know that lots of far-right attackers have claimed to be Trump supporters in recent months. So this is not just about Trump, but this is about politicians, especially on the right, taking seriously this problem and really being careful about their language, at a very minimum.
The language he uses in this manifesto is all about invaders. It's all about invaders, which is similar language to the killer at the synagogue in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. It's also language that President Trump used in a campaign ad before the midterm election. Yeah. The word invader means something to white supremacists around the world.
The perpetrators of a terrorist attack like this, they often look for code. They look for clues. Sometimes those clues and code are a figment of their imagination, and sometimes they're not. And I think the tragic reality is that President Trump, whether intentionally or I think in a lot of cases even inadvertently, has provided a lot of fodder for people like this.
A lot of people say the Trump administration or the Trump candidacy led to so much contempt, and it really divided our nation and has led to all this anger. I remember when people who were this angry were kind of on the fringe, if you will, and now it's all kind of become mainstream. How disappointed are people going to be that, whether it be in 2 or 6 years, that Donald Trump is gone and that we still have this in our culture?
Wow. Donald Trump is responsible for everything. The dog bite, the beast things, people feeling sad, and if people are absolute lunatics that go on terrorist sprees, let's blame Donald Trump. It's like Clinton blaming the Oklahoma City bombing on talk radio and Rush Limbaugh. Remember that? Just awful. Do you remember the shooting that took place in the ball field? Steve Scalise nearly died that day. And the shooter just turned out to be a Bernie Sanders supporter. Or the Unabomber had Al Gore's Earth in the Balance in that little shed wherever they found that lunatic. And but what I said, you know, especially more recently with Bernie, you can't blame the fact that somebody, their actions on a political philosophy does not support this. And that's where they make their stretch. I didn't hear any of these people make comments that ball field was shot up because of what Steve Scalise, but because of what the Bernie Sanders supporter loved, Bernie, all things socialist. It was all the Republicans in the field, and they were playing baseball. And then out of nowhere, a sniper comes out with a rifle. By the way, one of the most heroic moments as it relates to law enforcement, those two officers, you know what it's like if you don't shoot, if you don't understand firearms at all? Let me tell you what this is like. So you have a handgun and you're really far away from somebody who is hidden and barricaded back. and you're walking out in the middle of a baseball field after the guy can't be too bad a shot. He hit a number of people. And those two D.C. officers, Metro officers, I believe, walk through that field with their handguns, with their pistols. They're wide open. The shooter is, you know, hidden behind bushes and a fence. Now, basically, the odds of them surviving that were negligible. If the guy had any ability to fire that, trained even remotely, if it has a scope, forget it. It's over. But they did it anyway. That's how great these, that's why when, you know, I don't like to criticize rank and file FBI. I don't like to criticize police officers. You know, every time, you know, one bad cop does one thing, it's always, oh, all cops. It's not true. It's just the opposite. You know, most cops are not that way. We have the most prestigious law enforcement agency in the entire world, known as the FBI. And has their reputation been tainted because of Comey and McCabe and Strzok and Page and all these? Absolutely. You know, the people that I find that are most angry about it? Rank and file, you know, FBI agents, special agents, field agents, the people that actually do the jobs every day. The people that, interestingly, they had these particular investigations taken away from them. They weren't allowed to do the right job because we now know the fix was in. You know, and then you have Ocasio-Cortez. You know, you want to talk, I thought liberals were so, so loving and so, so compassionate. And her comments about the New Zealand shooting, well, what good are your thoughts and prayers? What good are they? Anyway, joining us now is Dan Hoffman, Fox News contributor, 30-year CIA ops officer. Jonathan Gillum is with us, former FBI agent, federal air marshal, author of the bestseller Sheep No More. You know, I thought liberals had a heart. Really, is it bad to offer prayers and thoughts to families that are devastated, that lost loved ones? I don't think it's that bad, Dan Hoffman. What do you think?
No, I think that's true, Sean. Prayers are always welcome in time of tragedy like this. And prayers have come from everyone, from the president and the First Lady Melania. I just think that, you know, some of the liberals you're talking about are focused on obviously the wrong thing. First of all, you don't apply a rational actor model to these killers. Most of these cases, they've got significant mental problems. And so ascribing some sort of a rationality to their beastly act is really not of all that much value to us, in my view. There are other lessons to be learned. This guy planned this attack 3 months ago. So there were probably opportunities left of Boom, because he probably conducted, you know, physical surveillance of the mosques. He probably was radicalized online. I mean, there are other opportunities. Those are lessons to learn, Sean, about how to prevent these attacks going forward. There have been all too many of them. The Pittsburgh Synagogue, Charleston, South Carolina, Sutherland Springs, Texas. We these are places that need to be obviously religious. Our churches and synagogues and mosques all unfortunately have to be aware of these threats and take measures to counter them before the killers inside the gate.
You know, I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, you know, what do we learn in this particular instance? We learned that, you know what, if you're unarmed, you don't have an ability to defend yourself. You know, I said this over and over. Nobody likes it. Whenever there's a school shooting, I say one of the best ways we should be handling school shootings, very simple. Retired police, retired military. We should have them on every floor. We should have them around the perimeters of schools. If we need to, yeah, I don't mind putting metal detectors in the school and getting the kids every day, make them walk through the metal detector like we always do when we go to an airport. It's not that big a deal. It's inconvenient. But there's creative ways. People say, well, you don't have the money for it, Jonathan. But if you get creative, what if they got all their income, if they donated, say, 15 hours a week? Just 15. I bet you've got guys signing up left and right. 15 hours a week will get you tax-free status federally, state, local. You know, so any money they make, they get to keep. If they have a, you know, but they're just donating and committing to 15 hours a week to protect our schools. That's 2 days a week.
Sean, there's no doubt in my mind. I mean, you and I have gone over this on the radio show several times, how these things are solvable, right? You know, what you're talking about, that's a realistic solution to a problem that is not going to go away. This is not going to go away. I mean, one of the things we have to look at what happened in New Zealand is the fact that they have some of the most stringent anti-gun laws that there are. But as I've always said, once a gun was invented, it will always be in the hands from that moment forward of bad people. You'll never be able to take away the guns from the bad people. You can take away the guns from the law-abiding citizens. And now we see the result of that in New Zealand. But I've got to point this out. It is burning a hole through me, and I'd love to get I know Dan is going to agree with me on this because of his training in the CIA. You know, what's happened in New Zealand is an act by one particular person and followers from what I'm looking at through the manifesto. And it's very, even though the guy talks about it, trying to get the U.S. involved in this stuff, it is a one single event that happened in that location. But what we've seen with the media, what you just played, is unbelievable because they took an event and they have twisted that to go after President Trump. And it's the most incredible thing I've ever seen. In a heartbeat, they have been able to put out, not just in the United States, but to the world and those around the globe that are far left, that President Trump is a danger because this person shot somebody or shot up a mosque in New Zealand. That is so incredible that they are able to take something from another part of the world and blast that out in such a subversive, just twisted way so rapidly, and basically push a message out that has nothing to do with that shooter, but they converted it into their own message, used an evil attack to go against Trump. That is, I think, the fastest I've ever seen this happen from another.
All right, as we continue, Dan Hoppen and Jonathan Gillum. All right, let's go over what stood out to you inside this manifesto. Dan, what did you think?
I mean, one of the things that I found interesting, he claims, and again, we have to take all this with a grain of salt. As I said, I wouldn't apply a whole lot of rationality to this guy. But one of the things that I found interesting was that he claimed that the attack in Sweden by the Uzbek national that killed a number of Swedes, including a young child, was what motivated him in part, immigration and an abhorrence of the immigrants who, even the small number, coming to New Zealand, and that he wanted none of these immigrants to feel safe in New Zealand. That's what this was about. Now, as far as I can tell, none of that has anything to do with the President of the United States. That's his twisted view of the world, and that apparently is what motivated him. And those are the things that stood out for me, Sean.
Yeah, and what stood out for you,
well,
Jonathan?
You know, I think that it's very interesting because the guy says throughout his manifesto, again, like Dan was saying, you know, he's kind of all over the place, but he hates certain groups and doesn't hate others. And he calls himself a ethno-nationalist instead of a white supremacist. And he actually says in there that he does not have any beef against Israel, and that his main beef is with different races that try to outbreed other races, and that was his fear. This is something that we haven't seen before, and they can call him a white supremacist, but this is on a different level.
Oh, unbelievable. You know, I look at this, you know, are you xenophobic, is Islamophobe, a nationalist? Are you a Nazi, an anti-Semite, a neo-Nazi, a conservative? No conservative I know likes any of those hate people. None of them, period. And what they try to do is they try to see, these are conservatives. No, they're not. They're not people anybody likes, anybody supports, that anybody thinks is even halfway rational. So, all right, thank you both. 800-941-SEAN, you want to be a part of the program. Quick break, right back, and we will continue straight ahead.
Here's what I want to know. Who's the he and he's not?
He is then-candidate Trump.
So when you said, no, Donald Trump's not, in connection with the question, going to become president, what's the it?
Chairman Gotti.
We'll stop it.
Chairman Gotti, that text needs to be taken in the context.
I'm asking, look, if you want to have a debate over a two-letter word, we're going to have to do that some other time. What and who did you mean by it?
Mr. Gowdy, as I've stated, that text was written late at night in shorthand.
I don't care when it was written. I don't care whether it was longhand, cursive. I don't care about any of that. I want to know what it meant, Agent Strzok.
It would be his candidacy for the presidency.
See, wasn't that tough?
My sense that the American population would not vote him into office.
Right, right. Well, we hadn't gotten to the will yet.
Well, I'm trying to cut to the chase and explain the text.
The will is the American people. Is that right? That's your testimony. The will stop it. You were speaking on behalf of the American people. Is that correct?
Mr. Gowdy, what my testimony is and what I said during extensive asking of this question during my prior interview is I don't recall writing that text.
Are you denying writing the text?
What I can tell you is that text in no way suggested that I or the FBI would take any action to influence the candidacy
Agent Strzok, that is a fantastic answer to a question nobody asked.
Yep. I understand that my sworn testimony will not be enough for some people. After all, Americans are skeptical of anything coming out of Washington. But the fact is, after months of investigations, there's simply no evidence of bias in my professional actions. And I am particularly proud of the work that I and many others did on the Clinton email investigation. Our charge was to investigate it competently, honestly, and independently, and that's exactly what happened.
When you bring up an integrity issue, and it's interesting you and the gentleman from Texas raised this in a way that almost, you know, approaches... It is insulting.
The gentleman, may answer the question.
What I'm saying, I am here under oath. I am not lying. I have never lied under oath, and I never will. And so the insinuation, not even the insinuation, the direct comment that you somehow say you have an integrity issue is insulting. I take offense. It is incorrect. Nothing I've said
here today. I never
mentioned
your personal life. I just simply said the amount of time that you were spending on the taxpayer's dollar, wasting it when you were supposed to be doing your job, texting back and forth to the court, is a problem.
And that's
what I'm saying is,
and the gentleman has already answered that.
All right, 24 now till the top of the hour as we continue this Friday. This has been now the most revealing 2 weeks we've had, and it's a result really of the courage of one congressman. His name is Doug Collins, who we're going to talk to in a minute, from the great state of Georgia. And in the two-week period, we now have the transcripts. Remember, these were behind closed doors, interviews, if you will, of Bruce Orr, of Lisa Page, Peter Strzok. And now we find out a lot more as it relates to all of this. Since we've now had the release, we now know because of David Kramer, he's the guy that worked for McCain, who gave the Steele dossier unverified to BuzzFeed. John McCain is the one that admitted giving the Steele dossier to the FBI. And now that we have a transcript of Kramer's testimony, again, thanks to Congressman Doug Collins, in a libel suit, released, late yesterday, we learned the Kramer spread, the unsubstantiated, now debunked, anti-Trump material all over Washington during the presidential transition. It was also revealed before the campaign. You know, so the bottom, you know, when you really take all of this together, what we see is there was election meddling from Russia, using Russians. And it was being disseminated by the highest ranking people in our government. And what we learned in a lot of these instances, first of all, everybody was warned by Bruce Orr. We learned that a week ago. Bruce Orr told everybody that the Steele dossier, that remember, Andrew McCabe said, without the dossier, we don't get the FISA warrant. We know that, in fact, every person was warned it was unverified, not corroborated. Hillary paid for it. It was politically tainted. And Christopher Steele hated Donald Trump and wanted to prevent him from winning the election. Now, as it relates to election interference, so they took this propaganda, these lies we now know about two hookers urinating in a bed in the Ritz-Carlton in Moscow and about in Donald Trump's hotel room. And that was spread and to the American people. They were purposefully propagandized with Clinton bought and paid for Russian lies. And by the way, sadly, you can say DNC, Russian paid for, bought and paid for Russian lies. You could say the FBI, because they were paying Steele too. So we had election meddling. And what we learned is, yeah, it all came from the Democrats. all came from Hillary. It was designed and used to misinform the American people before the election, to create an image of Donald Trump that was false based on lies so that people would vote for Hillary. Well, that's Russian interference paid for by Hillary and the DNC and a Russian oligarch and the FBI. They're all paying steal. And, you know, on top of that, then they abuse their power even further. It's not just that they influence, then they go ahead, even though they're warned in August of 2016 that she paid for it. It's political. Steele hates Trump, wants him to lose. And then they use it as the foundation for a FISA warrant. In other words, a conspiracy that they committed against the FISA court to deny an American citizen his constitutional rights, but even more importantly, to get to the inner workings of an opposition party candidate's campaign on the eve of an election. Remember, this was mid-October. James Comey signed off on that original FISA warrant, which means that he was saying that it's been verified, it's corroborated, it's true to the best of my knowledge. We now know that they never told the FISA court on purpose that Hillary paid for it. Then we have John Solomon's big story yesterday where they literally withheld from the FISA court exculpatory statements of George Papadopoulos and Carter Page. And so then, you know, months later after the warrant was issued to get into the Trump campaign vis-a-vis a Trump campaign associate page, well, then, you know, months later, that was issued in October, but then and renewed before James Comey ever went into the Oval Office, I'm sorry, into Trump Tower, talked to then President-elect Trump, and said, yeah, this dossier exists. It's salacious, but it's not verified. By that point, twice, the FISA court was told just the opposite. Now, this now tells us, this is on top of what Lisa Page said, who confirmed and corroborated, as did Peter Strzok in their testimony, that all of this investigation we now know was being orchestrated and led right from the top of the DOJ. That would be Obama's Justice Department. And it confirmed everything we knew. We knew Hillary violated the Espionage Act. So did James Baker, Comey's chief general counsel, number one lawyer at the FBI at the time. He knew she should be indicted for what she did as it relates to the server in a mom and pop shop bathroom closet. He understood all of that. He's the one that said, yeah, if she violated the Espionage Act, and yeah, of course it's obstruction. And Page's testimony confirms that they wouldn't even give them the emails if they had the other 33,000 emails. Loretta Lynch was personally making every decision. Yet that same Loretta Lynch that met Bill Clinton on the tarmac at a Phoenix FBO airport, you know, just days before the final decision was made. The same one that looked Jim Comey in the eye who said, well, and as it relates to the Clinton investigation, it's not an investigation. It's a matter. And then, of course, he goes along with it. And what they're saying is that, in fact, Loretta Lynch knew all of it. You know, investigators ask Loretta Lynch, is a headline on Red State today, why didn't the DOJ and FBI give Trump a defensive briefing if they suspected members of his campaign had ties to Russia? Why didn't they? Anyway, let me bring into this. Doug Collins is with us, Congressman Collins. And who said that all he was releasing all of these transcripts on his own. First of all, I thank you for your courage. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good, Sean. How about you?
I'm doing really good. Thanks to you. Now, there is a plethora. There's so many documents that we have not seen yet. You have finally opened the door and confirmed a lot of what I've reported and this team that I put together, that the best reporters in the country, on the biggest scandal, abuse of power. What did these releases tell you?
It tells me, and it gives legitimacy to what we've been saying, you've been saying, many others have been saying all along, that this was much bigger than just simply a passing fancy. This shows that Peter Strzok had very much of what I would just call an invincibility complex, that he was the the one that had high aspirations for going high up in the FBI, but he also had this aspiration that I can take on the world. He showed it in his recklessness in his affairs. He showed it in his recklessness in how he dealt with his security clearance, which, by the way, I asked him about and showed in the hearing, that same hearing that you played earlier, that he was out of scope for his own security clearance and should have been taken off the email investigation until he got back in clearance and been read out. He was never done both. He stayed on the investigations. This shows that the DOJ under President Obama had serious structural flaws that goes back to a very corrupt triumvirate, not only at the top, that it seems like, but within FBI of Strzok, Page, and McCabe, who thought they were invincible, and that's sort of what they operated as.
But what do you take out of them both saying that the attorney general at the time, Loretta Lynch, she was running the show?
Well, that brings up the second point that has come out of this, which I think has been one of the best things this week of talking to you, but also putting these out so that people can go through them. It is now bringing back the conversation that many of us wanted to have and continue to push, that Loretta Lynch and the Department of Justice were the ones that were reinterpreting law, saying that this is a matter that we're not going to be dealing with as an investigation. It was a issue that they wanted to sweep under the rug. They wanted to take gross negligence out. They read into the law an intent standard, which wasn't there. That came from the top. That shows that Loretta Lynch was personally involved in this more than anything before the infamous grandchild meeting on the tarmac, which everybody knew was a farce. So this is just going back.
I want to highlight what you're saying so our audience is really, really clear on this. So it was the DOJ lawyers working directly under Loretta Lynch, according to the testimony of Page and Strzok, and Page had been authoring, along with Comey and others, this exoneration. Now, this was all being written in May, something Comey testified, right, for the record. He said that he never did. He never wrote an exoneration before an investigation. They didn't interview Hillary or the main people until, what, you know, the 17 people till just days before they interviewed Hillary. That was in July. But they had already written, right, the exoneration. But what you're saying here about reinterpreting the law, I would take it a step further. When they removed the legal terminology, gross negligence, and replaced it with extreme carelessness, and now we know they added something that is not even in the law, they built it out of whole cloth. They literally ignored the law and made up their own law as they went so that they could exonerate their most favored candidate. And to do that would be a crime, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it be obstructing justice?
No, I think, to me, it goes back into, and it takes into obstructing the investigation that was going on. It really became a farce investigation, not to even call it that. Because if you're starting out with a premise, we're going to handle this as a matter, we're upset because the one that we wanted to be a part and wanted to be president is now done something we know is not right, that anybody else out here, this goes back to that two-tier justice system that has been going on now. And remember, this has been discussed now for many. This is not revelatory. This simply provides the transcript proof that this was the things that was talked about at the time that many of us were talking about it 2.5+ years ago. What we need to understand now, and what I hope Bill Barr will do and others, as they go through and look at this and say, look, this was an investigation that can be reopened, that could be, you know, looked at, because here is information that I believe needs to be addressed, in the sense of you have folks who are interfering basically with investigation from the top, saying we're going to come to a conclusion we want long before we interview anybody else. Tell me, Sean, anybody else in the country?
Nobody.
You, myself,
it was rigged.
Anybody else.
It was rigged from the get-go. All right, Congressman Collins, we're going to have to let you go. Thank you so much, sir, for being with us, and we hope you'll join us again. How many more releases are coming?
There's plenty more. We're just working the transcripts out now, so we'll just be watching. We're out next week, but we'll still have some things going on, but I'll let you know as we go forward, okay?
Okay, thank you, sir. Appreciate it. 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number.
Coming up next, our final news roundup and information overload hour.
All right, news roundup, information overload, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN. If you want to be a part of the program, yeah, a little Friday concert series coming up today. I want to go back, because all the Republicans yesterday in the Senate, well, a lot of them, 12 of them, I think, finally, that they didn't go along with the president's national emergency, which is mind-numbing to me, because there is no bigger emergency that is impacting every small town and big city in this country, and the statistics are mind-numbing, and finally we have a chance to get it done. Now, the good news is, neither in the House and the Senate after the president vetoes this, we'll be able to override the veto. That means he wins, he gets the money, and he will appropriate the funds. So that's the good news. Now, I want to play the president saying that it's bad for Republicans if they vote against the national emergency and border security. Let's start with that one.
Nobody's beaten up. I said, use your own discretion. But I think it's a bad vote if they go against, I think anybody going against border security, drug trafficking, human trafficking, that's a bad vote. The Democrats are for open borders. They're for crime. I mean, frankly, they're for crime. These people can tell you that better than anyone. When you have open borders, when you don't have a walls, Mike, when you know it very well, all of you folks know it very well. We deal with it all the time. I guess they think it's good politically. I think it happens to be bad politically. I think it's an 80% issue and maybe more than that. But the Democrats, in order to make things difficult, they are for open borders and they're for crime. And the Republicans aren't. But I told Republican senators, vote any way you want. Vote how you feel good. But I think it's bad for a Republican senator. I also think it's bad for a Democrat senator to vote against border security and to vote against the wall. I think if they vote that way, it's a very bad thing for them long into the future.
Now, the president is right on in 100 different levels. He's right. And for example, let's play, oh, this is not a national emergency. Let's discuss what is a national emergency.
President Trump must stop holding the American people hostage, must stop manufacturing a crisis.
This president just used the backdrop of the Oval Office to manufacture a crisis.
This is a manufactured crisis. No crisis exists, and anyone making the argument is most likely guilty of fear-mongering and willfully misleading the American people.
Locals will tell him on the border, even conservatives, is that there isn't a national security crisis.
The notion that we have a crisis there, a security crisis, is absolute nonsense.
This is a manufactured crisis, and a crisis that manufactured by the Trump administration.
This artificial crisis of the president isn't going to justify his appropriating money for a wall that Congress is unwilling to give.
Is there a crisis at the border? The president said there's a humanitarian crisis at the border. Is there?
Absolutely not. We have a challenge. All our humanitarian issues or challenges for us.
The big scam of the whole address was that there's a crisis. There's not a crisis.
Folks, the president has manufactured one heck of a political crisis for himself.
Donald Trump is manufacturing a national security crisis.
You will hear them say is that this is a manufactured crisis. It's not a national security crisis.
It remains a Seinfeld shutdown.
Seinfeld
all
presidency.
All about nothing.
What happens when there is a real crisis, when there is a real emergency? Does he take to the airwaves? Do we give him the airwaves? Do we believe him?
Some question if there is a crisis at all, as the president has claimed.
There is not a crisis at the border. It's a manufactured crisis for the president to get a political win.
Crisis can have, as we see now, a very elastic definition.
He's determined to convince you there is a crisis at the border, even though an intelligence official tells CNN, quote, no one is saying this is a crisis except them.
I mean, you notice there's no difference between the radical, extreme, liberal, democratic, socialist party and the media. They are one in unison. They use the same words, the same phrases, the same talking points, the same bumper stickers, the same platitudes, because they're like united. You know, two shall become one. They're it's like they're soulmates, like they have bonded in a way that you could never break. It's insane. Here's the problem. If we have each and every single day, we have 90% of America's heroin coming across that border every single day. And on top of that, now fentanyl, which is killing so many, you know, now that's coming across the border, despite all the deaths, all the warnings, all of the, you know, how many more statistics? Are we numb to statistics when you're talking about 300 people a week? Does that, are we that cold that, you know, we don't think, well, it's only 300? I mean, well, it's not me, it's somebody else. Okay, let's think of one of the 300. Let's think of their families. Okay, here's the call. Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so, I'm sorry to tell you, or maybe they come to the door. We have some very tragic news to tell you that your Johnny, Susie, Marie, Tom have we found them and they're deceased. What happened? Drug overdose. 90% of that heroin comes right across the border. Now, that happens to 300 families a week. Okay, that happens tens of thousands of times a year. 90% of heroin comes across the border. Fentanyl now is coming across our southern border. I even have Obama officials. They didn't focus on fentanyl. It's burning its way across America. And that's a headline from the Washington Post when Obama's president. And they talk about firefighters responding. 28-year-old man overdosed October 16th, New Hampshire, one of the states hit hardest by the country's fentanyl crisis. Despite mounting deaths and warnings, the Obama administration did not take extraordinary measures to confront an extraordinary crisis, experts say. May of 2016, small group national health experts issued an urgent plea in a private letter to high-level officials in the Obama administration. Thousands of people were dying from overdoses from fentanyl, in the deadliest drug ever to hit the United States, and the administration needed to take immediate action. Epidemic had been escalating for 3 years, it says. Now, again, this is before Trump ever becomes president. 11 experts pressed the officials to declare fentanyl a national public health emergency and that they would put laser-like focus on combating this emerging epidemic and warn the country about the threat. Quote, the fentanyl crisis represents an extraordinary public health challenge, requires an extraordinary public health response, the experts wrote to six Obama administration officials, including at the time the nation's drug czar and the chief of the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. The administration considered the request, didn't do a thing. Thought liberals cared about people. They're being warned to doing nothing for 3 years. Donald Trump, we secure the border. Those borders are secure. No, that the heroin doesn't come in these kind of numbers. They're going to have to find other ways. Criminals can be very clever, but we got to stay ahead of them in every way. And that's the problem. And I'm going to add this. In a two-year period, 4,000 homicides. Two-year period, 30,000 sexual assaults. In a two-year period, 100,000 violent assaults by criminal aliens against Americans. And again, it's the 2%, not the 98% that want a better life. Anyway, joining us is Derek Maltz. He is a former DEA special agent in charge of Special Operations Division. And about whether, you know, when you look at the cartels, Derek, and you look at the fentanyl and the heroin and the gang members, and then you look at some of the violent criminals that mix in with the people that just want a better life and opportunity that we have, and they're just not respecting our laws in the process. And I'm thinking, how many more people have to die before people say, you know what, that's way too many? What do you
think? Sean, like, first of all, I have very strong opinions about this because I lived this nightmare back in the Obama administration as the head of the agency. My people briefed President Obama's attorney general. And obviously it wasn't that important because there was no sense of urgency. And now we see the crisis, and now poor President Trump has inherited this dysfunctional mess. Bottom line is, Sean, 1 kilogram of fentanyl can kill 500,000 people. You know the statistics, and I agree. It's like after a while, you can't even talk about it anymore. That Border Patrol seizure of the 115 kilos of fentanyl, right, that could kill 57 million people, right? And you look at the amounts of people that can die. What people don't realize is these kids today, they're taking this stuff and they're snorting cocaine. It's inside the other drugs. It's not just heroin, right? And it's coming through the Southwest border. Yeah, this stuff coming from China. But we have this dangerous Chinese-Mexican cartel relationship, Sean, as well. And we need to be way more aggressive. Look at this poor lady, Bambi Lawson, yesterday, right? You know, we heard about it in the news yesterday, this undocumented alien. You know, he's in and out of the country. And they file ICE detainer 7 times, but they let the guy out. Then he butchers this lady with a 7-inch knife. So we have a big problem here. This is not only a national emergency. It's a national health crisis. It's a national humanitarian crisis. And I'm sick and tired of people trying to spin it that America doesn't want immigration. America loves immigration, but legal immigration, Sean.
But the big scam of the whole address was that there's a crisis. There's not a crisis.
911, what is the address?
Murray Hill, West Broad Street. Somebody's OD'ing in a red car.
What is he overdosing on?
I think heroin.
My neighbor and her sister both overdosed on heroin.
The victim appeared to have been
executed and left in the street. We were able to identify a group of MS-13 gang members who we believe are responsible.
Tommy Vladim Alvarado Ventura is accused of stabbing two women and sexually assaulting a two-year-old girl.
We saw from Trump today the typical lying, the nonsense, the spinning of crises out of whole cloth.
MS-13 gang members were rounded up this morning, charged in three murders. 16-year-old Kayla Cuevas and her 15-year-old best friend, Nisa Mickens, brutally beaten to death.
America's overdose crisis is worse than ever before. Because of the synthetic opioid fentanyl, it is deadlier than heroin.
Overdose deaths have almost doubled from this time last year.
The synthetic opioid fentanyl is causing carnage like America has never seen.
Overdoses are now the leading cause of death for Americans under the age of 50.
Start out with this idea of crisis. The president used that word several times in the speech.
Just because you say it's a crisis, George, doesn't necessarily make it one.
As we continue with Derek Maltz, former DEA agent in charge of Special Operations Division, and about whether this is a manufactured crisis at the border. But the fact that all these people keep saying manufactured crisis, well, that's not what Obama officials were hearing directly, you know, for 3 years prior to Donald Trump ever becoming president. You know, think back in the second term of Obama, all the Democrats, they wanted to fund and build the wall. But now that because he wants to do it, now they're immoral. And now we've got Democratic candidates going so extreme, they want to tear down the walls we have, which means we'd have wide open borders and anybody could walk across pretty much any time they wanted. And I think that's extraordinarily dangerous.
And Sean, look at this guy, you know, that did the murder. He's from El Salvador. You know, MS-13, their motto is rape, kill, control. They're chopping up people with machetes in this country. I mean, it's amazing that people just don't wake up. Put the politics aside, Sean. This is really just about the security of our country. And it's a shame that the politicians, they won't even listen to the experts. DHS secretary goes in to give them a professional briefing, which is her job, on the state of the border. They dismiss her. Within 2 minutes, they don't even want to hear her. And then you have these people, they go down to the border, and they hear from the Tom Holmans of the world, the Brandon Judds, the Mark Morgans. These guys were experts at the border, and they still dismiss them. Like, so who are they listening to? AOC or somebody like that, Sean? I mean, really?
Well, it's not just her. Listen to Beto. Listen to Kamala. Listen to Elizabeth Warren. Listen to Bernie Sanders. I mean, I don't think any of them have the understanding that we need to secure the borders and we need to do the right thing.
Well, Sean, what I like to say is that thank God the president cares about the security of our country and the people, and he's standing up strong because this is what we need. We need to have that wall. It's not going to solve every problem on the border, but it's going to help the Border Patrol manage their resources. They can get great technology, great screening equipment. They put their manpower at the funnel where all these people are going to come in. We want to create one option for these people. And if they come through the point of entry, at least we have a better shot at finding the drugs, finding out the background of these characters. But right now, they're walking over the border. Sean, do you know about the cases in Atlanta? This is something that nobody's talking about. There's a methamphetamine lab that they hit about a month ago in Atlanta, the DEA. And the meth lab was one of the largest labs in over 20 years. 400 pounds of liquid meth, and meth was seized. But here's the deal. The guys that were arrested, were six out of seven were illegal, right? They were all illegal. And here's all for the Democrats. I don't hear them yelling that 1 pound of meth can create, like, or actually this particular seizure, they said, could create 2,000 pounds of toxic waste in our community. But nobody's talking about that. And then the case they did like 2 weeks ago in Atlanta Division of DEA, they had most of the people arrested on this Sinaloa cartel case, they were all illegally here because they're walking over the border. They're not going through the point of entry. They're walking over the border, coming to set up as cell heads or operating all over our country. They're actually the ones that are doing the day-to-day work. And that's the thing. They don't realize it.
Well, they're not talking to the rank and file, and they don't want to talk to them, just like they didn't want to talk to angel families. Listen, Derek, I appreciate your time so much. What you're doing is phenomenal, and I'm glad you're telling the truth, and I wish the Democrats would listen to you and the families that lose people. That's who we should be listening to. All right, before we get to your calls here on this Friday, final half hour, let me first play. I don't know what it is about fake news CNN. They're just obsessed with not only, if they're not talking every second, every minute, every hour, every day about Trump, they're talking about Fox News. They are the lowest rated cable network by a long shot. And it's been this way for a long time. And I guess I understand, you know, they are they're the resistance, if you will, the propaganda arm of the resistance. And they can't even see their own malpractice every day. It's on, just turn on the TV and it's malpractice. It's journalism, forget it. It's dead. And so Zucker says this about Fox, and then we're going to play just a little reminder to Zucker about what his network does obsessively, regurgitating liberal talking points.
We sued the president of the United States because on that day, it was CNN. But on any other day, it could have been any one of you. This administration has made it abundantly clear that they do not have respect for or tolerance of a free and independent press. They call us the enemy of the people. They limit our access. They selectively grant interviews, most often to outlets that have assured them that they will follow the script. Quite literally, they put our lives at risk with their words and their actions.
Is this president trying to impersonate Hugo Chavez, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, Vladimir Putin?
What a great case officer Vladimir Putin is. He knows how to handle an asset, and that's what he's doing with the president.
When do we see almost a shadow government come out and say, we cannot side with the government?
Why is President Trump showing sympathy for white nationalists and other hate groups?
What does that tell you in an America that that in one generation called you a what does that tell you, Don?
We can surely say his words have absolutely emboldened white supremacists.
He has given oxygen to racists. He is clearly trying to ignite a civil war in this country.
There's a sign out there that's been hung up in the White House or outside the White House saying, if you're not white, you're not especially welcome.
The president gets two scoops. You know, everyone around the table gets one. No word if there were sprinkles.
If you think you've had an earful of Donald Trump, check out what's in the ear of a beagle in Britain named Chief. Brace yourself.
If he took a dump on his desk, you would defend it.
16 tweets today to start the new year. Some of them deeply disturbing. These are the messages from a person who is not well, from a leader who is not fit for office.
He's President Snowflake, okay? Everything he said, oh, they're mean to me and they don't like me and I just don't understand it and it's not fair.
This was a white lash. This was a white lash against a changing country. It was a white lash against a black president in part.
Well, I think that's a pretty good reminder, don't you? I love these tapes. I really do. All right, 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. All right, as we get to our phones this Friday, Craig is in Lynchburg, Virginia. Craig, hey, how are you? Glad you called, sir.
Hey, Sean, how are you?
I'm good. Happy Friday.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks for taking my call. So I've been waiting to make this call for like 2 months. I have been listening to AOC talk about how we can't do anything without the government's assistance, and everybody's, you know, everything in the world is unfair, and everybody, you know, the government doesn't step in, and socialism is so much better if the government doesn't step in, and, you know, 200 million people below the poverty level. I don't know if you remember me. I'm the guy, I was homeless in Nashville, and I called the show one time. I was doing carpentry, and you actually offered me $2,000 to help me get started, and I wouldn't take your money.
Why didn't you take, why wouldn't you take my money? Why? I didn't mind giving it to, I give money to a lot of people.
I know, but you specifically said you need tools, you need business cards, and I'm like, dude, I do remember the call.
I mean,
business cards.
Okay, so how did you get out of the hole you were in?
Why? Well, I worked my way out. I worked 2 or 3 jobs. I finally got hired. I work at Liberty University. I've been here 5 years, and I've been doing side jobs and 2 and 3 jobs at a time. And I've been waiting to make this call because I just left my closing, and I have. I'm a little emotional. I just bought a house again. First time in 12 years I've owned my own home. It's me and my daughter. I'm a single dad. And I did it.
How many years ago was it that you called me? Because I do remember this. I remember the call. I remember talking about the tools.
2013. Wow. It was a year before I got hired at Liberty and moved up here.
And you got out of the hole you were in. How old is your daughter?
She'll be 21 in May. She's a music major at Liberty. Has a beautiful voice. She lives with me. And I fought my way back, and the government didn't have to help me. And I worked hard, and I never thought I was going to own a home again. It was that, you know, things were terrible, and we just closed today. Literally.
Now, where were your kids at this time? Because obviously you had kids. Where were they as all this was going on?
Well, I just have the one. I just have my daughter. So her mom and I divorced 20 years ago, and her mom thanked me for a place to live, but she had remarried, and he was such an abusive guy. I mean, he like would killed my daughter's pets one time. Just it was terrible. Gosh. I had to stay.
Right.
I had to stay because I was sort of the barrier between him and my daughter. He knew that if he crossed certain lines, you know, me and my Italian cousins are coming through the front door. And so I had to stay there, and I had to live in my car. I was almost five and a half years, and just, you know, couldn't find any
work.
The
only thing I'm going to say is, first of all, I'm really proud of you. You did, first, you're staying there for your daughter. You're protecting your daughter, even though you're in the worst circumstances. And for all that time, and then you have this dopey radio guy saying, here, let me buy you some tools. You go you go out and work. What's the name of the guy, Linda, from South Carolina that we sent to trucking school? What's that guy's name?
Tavares.
Oh, yeah. How can I forget? Tavares. And I just said to Tavares, I said, here, I'm going to send you to trucking school. And he went, and his life's changed. You know, this is not a criticism. If somebody in life wants to share something with you, you know, one of the things, I know we're all prideful. Let people be nice to you if they want to be nice to you. Now, let me ask you this question. How old are you now?
You said tools. I am 55.
Okay. Do you have any retirement money?
No. I have what's in my savings account. I just bought a house.
Yeah. Okay. So you got your house. All right. I'll tell you what I am going to do then, because I want you to save your money. We're going to send you on like a vacation. Where do you live now?
Lynchburg, Virginia.
I'm going to send you. Yeah. We're going to send you to like, you know, maybe a nice place in, you know, Naples, Florida or Palm Beach. You can take your daughter for the weekend and, you know, just have a nice weekend on me. OK. And this time you're not going to say no, because I'm not going to let you say no. And I'm going to tell you why, because you're not going to spend money right now on a vacation because you got to save it for your retirement. So take the weekend. And this is what I want you to tell your daughter for me, okay? You called my show those years ago and you didn't take my offer. And you work. She knows what you did. She knows you protected her. Yeah. She knows you picked yourself up out of a tough situation and you've turned your life around. And you just say that Sean Hannity said he's so proud of your dad that I want to give you this. I'm going to work out something really nice for you and her. And just stay on the line. We'll take care of it, okay?
Amen. God bless you, brother. Thank you.
God bless you. You enjoy that vacation. And don't say no. I don't want to hear it. All right, Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. We're loaded up with breaking news tonight. Yes, we now have a fourth transcript. In this case, the assistant to John McCain. He's the one that gave to BuzzFeed after McCain fed the FBI the dirty Clinton bought and paid for dossier. Alan Dershowitz, Congressman Turner, also Sarah Carter, Matt Schlapp, Jason Chaffetz tonight, Kayleigh McEnany, and Pam Bondi. 9 Eastern Hannity. We'll see you tonight. Have a great weekend. See you back here on Monday.